This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson Intellectual Property Lawyers. Are you a writer, illustrator, or inventor? You need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers. They should be yours. Well, last week I mentioned that there is a Reader's Digest contest coming up. The deadline is May 7th. So for everyone who is interested in doing that, go to the Writer's Digest webpage and check out what you need to do in order to enter something. They have a lot of different categories, and I'm sure for all of you writers, there's one category there just for you. And today I have on the phone a wonderful writer who won another contest, and that's Joanna Campbell Slan. Hi, Joanna, are you there?
Hi, how are you, Patsy?
Oh, great. Listen, I know that you won the 2013 Daphne du Maurier Award of Excellence.
Yes.
Was that exciting?
I was so shocked. I didn't even know what to say. I just burst into tears.
Well,
it was exciting.
It is, you know, of all the, there's, you know, some really great contests, as I mentioned. Of course, the Writer's Digest contest is one of the best. But the Daphne du Maurier contest is also a great contest to enter. And it's you have to enter it in February, March. And I know the deadline is closed for this year. But writers should keep it in mind, and of all the contests to enter, not only is it just a wonderful award because the people who give out the award are all some of the best in the industry, and they know what they're talking about. So that you won shows how very talented you are.
Well, but, thank you.
But also, I know that they have a party. I don't know, did you get to go to their party at the presentation, the Death by Chocolate?
I actually, this is so embarrassing, Patsy. I was so confident that I had no chance of winning that I skipped the ceremony to to a book signing.
Oh, no.
I thought there is no way that I'm going to win this. No way. And so somebody local who was a fan of mine said, would you come to this bookstore and sign books? And I thought, well, rather than sit there and watch someone else win, I will do that. So I came back from the book signing, and I went down to the room where they'd had the event because I thought, well, I'll go see who won. And I was in the ladies' room, and this woman was washing her hands, and I said, do you happen to know who won for historical fiction? She said, hang on, I've got the program, and I circled things. And she and I stood there, and she ran down the list, and she said, Joanna Campbell Slan. And I said, what? And she said, Joanna Campbell Slan. I said, that's me. She said, that's you. I said, that's me. And so we did this little happy dance. So, yeah, and, you know, it's a special award. Every award is special because it does elevate you above your peers. It says that you've done something right. But that one is still monitored, still authorized by the Daphne du Maurier estate. So since Rebecca is one of my favorite books, I just felt like it was a benediction of sorts.
Well, I know.
So that's my embarrassing.
It is. It's a great honor, even if you do receive it in the bathroom. Actually, that's a great story. So, but I'm sure every time you eat chocolate now, you think, oh, well, where I should have been at the moment it was announced. But that's funny. I think that's delightful. Well, you know, there's so many books to talk to you about. You're prolific, that's for sure. And you've been, you know, at this, you started off with scrapbooking books, which, of course, as an avid scrapbooker, the minute I hear scrapbooking, I get all sort of excited, and I'm like, I'm ready. Just give me a pair of scissors. Let me start making something. So your series, which is about a scrapbooker named Kiki Lorenstein, tell us about this. Where did you came up with the idea? You're scrapbooking one day, and you say, oh, I might as well turn this into a novel?
No, actually, what had happened was it actually began before that. I was one of the first essayists in the Chicken Soup for the Soul series.
Ah.
And I had multiple stories in that series. And after that, I was asked to do a book on family stories. So that became Scrapbook Storytelling. That was the first of the scrapbooking books, and it sold 120,000 copies. And because of that, and I went on to write more scrapbooking books, I knew a lot about the industry. So there was at least one, if not two, other scrapbooking mysteries out there. And so I thought to myself, oh, I'll never be able to write a scrapbooking mystery because it's already covered. And I went to a conference, and I was talking to Emily Richards, who actually lives over there by Tampa. And Emily said, listen to what I was thinking about, and I told her I was thinking about writing a mystery. And we were sitting in somebody else's session, and she passed me a note, and I opened it, and it said, why don't you write a scrapbooking mystery? So I got to thinking about it, and, you know, I realized that the other people didn't know scrapbooking the way I did, because I'd been so immersed in the industry. And so I came up with my own take on it. And at the time, I was living in St. Louis, and I thought to myself, well, what would be the most dramatic situation for a woman to be in? And I realized that it would be to realize that your whole marriage was a sham, and to think that you were financially taken care of, and to discover that you weren't. And so that was the premise for Kiki Lowenstein. And I named her Lowenstein after the therapist in A Prince of Tides by Pat Conroy, who sadly passed away this year.
Well, she's a great character, and
thank you.
Oh, through the series, how many are there now?
I'm working on the 12th book, and there are, I think, about 30 or 40 short stories.
And you've just developed, you've developed her character and all the characters around her so beautifully. I think, you know, one of course, the one that people, you know, are always interested in is her love life. And tell us about her lover.
Detweiler. It's funny because I think of the books that I write as also being scrapbooks, in that I put into them things in my life that have mattered, people who have mattered to me. And when I was in college, there was a young man named Frank Detweiler, and he was very kind to me at a time that was very difficult in my life. He wasn't my boyfriend, but he was very kind to me. So when I was searching around for names, I liked the name Detweiler, and it felt good to me. So Kiki gets involved with a cop named Detweiler, and all of my characters have backstories, and like all of us, they've made mistakes. And they're trying their best to make their way through the world. My husband likes to think that he looks exactly like Detweiler, and he's exactly like Detweiler. So I let him think that.
And as romantic. Now, when you started this series, did you expect that it would go so into so many books?
No. In fact, I had started with one book, and I went in and I pitched an agent and an editor, and both of them said, now this is a series, isn't it? And I looked at them and I said, Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I walked out thinking, oh, my word. So, no, I didn't think in terms of writing a series, and I did not expect the sort of loyalty to Kiki that people have had. Last year, I actually got an email from a reader, and she was sending it to a friend, and she had sent it to me by mistake, saying, when is Kiki going to have her baby? I am so tired of waiting for this woman to have her baby. And she went on and on and on about it, you know? And there's a part of me that wanted to send her an email back and say, "This, you do realize this is a fictional character."
happens. Yes, that happens. You know, readers get invested in a character, and it's wonderful when they sort of lose that line, and you start to really think that the books that you're reading, the people are real, and that's a great compliment to the writer, that people feel so well. You're so descriptive anyway. I mean, and you are able to really create the scene and create the atmosphere. And of course, the name of Kiki's store is A Time in a Bottle,
mm-hmm. and from the Jim Croce song. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just you really create a beautiful atmosphere there for readers to jump into.
Thank you. I think my favorite notes from readers are how my books help them through a rough time, because they were an escape for them. I just got a letter from a lady whose son committed suicide, and she said, "You don't know me, but I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't discovered your books during that time," because she discovered my Caramilla Delgado series set here in Florida, and she said they took me away from everything that was happening when I couldn't take anymore. And I really think that that's an unsung benefit of books that, unfortunately, I don't know that kids today are learning that, because they read for school. But if you read for pleasure, anytime this world gets to be too much for you, you can pick up a book and you can escape.
That's true. And I was sad to read the other day, there was a story about how college students can't read an entire book anymore. They're having difficulty. And what really got me is the professors were saying, "Well, okay, we won't give them books." And I thought, well, yeah, I don't know if that's a solution. And this is in England where they're supposed to be able to read, you know, and the universities are supposed to be able to encourage you to read. But it is a problem. And I'm still hopeful that there is this generation of kids who read Harry Potter and, you know, who read Harry Potter when they were younger and are still able to read a long book. If it's, you know, if the book is interesting enough and you can hook them into it, and that's the important thing. So I love to encourage writers who are, you know, doing young adult fiction to really get out there and write and capture this audience while they're young, so that they'll grow into big readers when they're older. Because you're right, you cannot get the same benefit, the same sort of feeling of getting into another world as you can in a book. Television or movies just don't cut it, I don't think. So I'm hopeful that we'll get more young readers with a, you know, people who write the good young adult fiction. But now with you, of course, you write wonderful works that are, well, the Scrapbook Gate, I think, was a great thing, because there are so many scrapbookers out there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've done a lot of scrapbooking, and for different groups, you know, every ladies group I belong to, I've always been the sort of scrapbooking queen, you know, and for the different associations and groups, and I just love it because it brings people together. And and as I know, one of the things that in your things, you have this whole sort of memory albums that Kiki, you know, is involved with. And I think that's so so relevant to people's lives, that they should create these memory albums.
One reason I was attracted to scrapbooking was that early on I worked with a book doctor on an early version of the Kiki books, and she was a much vaunted woman. People thought very highly of her. The other people in the writing group that I belonged to, many of them had used her, and she told me that the most boring thing on earth would be a housewife. And I thought about that, and I thought that she was absolutely wrong, because when you get to know women, what you find is that they are quite often the hub of the family, and they're the person who's given birth, who have held the hands of someone who's dying. They're the people who know all the secrets. They're the people who patch people up and send them on their way. And I just thought that she was wrong. I thought that she was short-sighted, and that was a really stupid comment. And it was also, I think the word's facile comment, because it was an easy thing to say and very dismissive, but it didn't show a lot of thought. So I felt that writing about women and their lives and what goes on was a challenge, but it was also something that I could do to make people realize that we do have worth and value, even if we aren't behind a machine gun, or if we aren't the head of a multimillion-dollar company.
If anything, I was a homeschool mom for 20 years, and so you can imagine the kind of projects and all the things that I did with my boys, all the different events, and all of the things that required, whether it was a little theater, or it was the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts. And, there's always these projects, and all of the moms were there, and we were all doing things and creating things. And, it's funny, you're right. What these women who are sometimes undervalued just have such a enormous capacity for creativity. And it was just, those were the most wonderful years of my life, to be able to, do all of these projects with my kids, and to just have this fun of creating, whether it was a calendar for a Cub Scout project, or doing one of their events and doing a program for it. All of these things show how creative women can be, and really I hope that more women understand that this is as valuable, if not more valuable, than being a CEO of a company, because it's those years that you have with your kids that are so important, and what they remember too. So
well, when you think about it, as you were talking, and I was mentally going through the different activities that you described. If you think about Queen Elizabeth and you think about Princess Di, which of those two people would you automatically say was the most beloved? And that would probably have been Princess Di. And yet Queen Elizabeth is the head of a country. But why was it that we loved Princess Di? Well, one of the reasons was because she cared about children, because she cared about other people, because she showed her emotions and her heart to us all, because she was vulnerable. So to say that that's uninteresting, again, she was just wrong.
Exactly. Well, you do. Your characters are spunky. Your female characters are spunky, and they... As Kiki discovered, she found herself in a bad place, and boy, did she, get into it and change her life around.
I try to have every book have a social theme in the Kiki Lowenstein series, and so typically there'll be two or three people who are dealing with situations. In one of them, it was domestic violence. In one of them, it was the problem of aging mothers, since so many women live so much longer than men. In one, it was racism. And so what I hope to do is not only show women being creative and women being supportive of each other, but also show a social issue and how it impacts people's lives and the different thinking that people bring to bear on it, and also maybe give my reader a little insight into parts of that social situation that they may not have realized. And I did have one mother who came to me about the book that has domestic violence, and she handed it to her young adult son, and he read it, and he was in a verbally abusive relationship, and she used it as a springboard to talk to him about, you know, is this really what you want out of life?
Well, you know, this is exactly what I was thinking, and when I read your books, that I like that you put in this social relevance, and it's helpful. It's helpful to people to find sort of a hint of a idea to help them address a problem. And so I want to talk more about your books. I want to talk about a spinoff that you did from the Kiki books, and that's a delightful series, Carmi Delgado series, and we'll be right back. I have to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Okay, you hold on.
I will.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Joanna Campbell Sladd, a national best-selling author who has written three series?
Yeah, I think it's three.
Three mm-hmm. series. Well, let's talk. You know, we're talking about the Kiki Lowenstein series, which is basically about a crafter, and all of the books are filled with wonderful crafting ideas. And And of course, the mysteries are great and the characters are great. And you had a spin-off character that you turned into another series. And I think it was a very clever thing to do because Cara Mia Delgado, which is the next series, is a great character.
Thank you. I actually kind of did it backwards. I kind of reverse engineered it. I wanted to have another series. I'd moved to Florida. I wanted to write about Florida. So I came up with Cara Mia, and then I inserted her into the Kiki book. And what I love about Cara Mia is that she reflects the things that are happening down here in Florida. And she also, in her books, there's always a little bit of Florida history. Because if you're an occasional visitor like a snowbird, you may not realize how much history this state has and how old this state is.
And you really create the environment. You know, it's I know that when people read your books, one of the comments they always say is, "Well, I feel like I'm there. I'm really there." And I know you love Florida, and so it's reflected in the work. And I tell us a little bit of how Cara got here, Cara Mia got here, and what did she do? How did she get here?
Well, first of all, I was born in Florida, and I'm always amazed at how few of us there are besides the palmetto bugs that and the lizards that were born here. So I wanted Cara Mia to come here with the fresh eyes of someone who was not native to Florida, and I wanted her to be surrounded by some people who were either native Floridians or close to it so they could also share with her the points of view she might miss. For example, if you're not from here, you may not realize that the seasons do change here, and the trees do change, and the plants do change. So what I wanted was to kind of create a kaleidoscope, kind of microscope, kind of magnifying glass where people could look at this world with the kind of wonder that it deserves. Cara is a good girl. She's always done what was expected of her. She's made some mistakes in life, and then her parents die within 6 months of each other, and her son tells her he's going to Miami to go to the university. She thinks he means Miami, Ohio, and then she finds out he's going to University of Miami in Florida. So she decides to hop in her car and take a road trip because, as I said, her parents are dead. Her kid has left the nest, and really, she's at loose ends with her life. And on the way down here, she had decided to pass her grandfather's home in Stewart and see him on the way back because her grandfather's kind of a pain in the butt. But when she gets to near the Stewart exit, her car starts misbehaving, and she realizes she really needs his expertise and his attention. So she stops in Stewart, and then she winds up buying a deserted building there, only to find that it's not really deserted. It's actually being occupied by a fresh corpse.
Ah. a nice opening. And I think with the first book, which is Tear Down and Die, you really got into this whole cozy mystery atmosphere of developing a character who was, starting over and turning her life around. And so the readers can follow along to see how her life's going to turn out. And I think that you are able to draw the readers into this story.
One of the things that I try to do as an author is populate a book with sub-characters or secondary characters that really play off each other. I think back to Gilligan's Island, and when you think about it, there were so many different personalities. There was, Gilligan, who was happy-go-lucky and he was up for anything. There was the skipper, who had an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. There was the movie star, who was all about herself and taking care of herself. There was the professor who was very cerebral, and he approached everything from a problem-solving atmosphere, or attitude, I guess I should say. So what I try to do is create a cast of characters around my main character who... A group of people who are all very different with different goals, so that the collective group is constantly bumping heads. And I think that makes it more interesting, and it gives more variety and color to my books.
Well, you know, I think this is a fantastic series, and one that readers will really enjoy. You start from the beginning and you just see the whole development of the storyline and of all, as I said, as you flesh out all of the characters along the way. It's really great.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed writing about Cara Mia. And you know, Patsy, what a lot of people may not realize, particularly if they're new to writing, is that even authors who have been published, you would hope, get better with each book. And I truly think that this is the best of my writing, because I feel like I've learned so much over the years, and I'm really able to apply it to the page with the Cara Mia books. I feel like it's a much richer experience for my readers.
Well, I think, and you know, as somebody who reads a lot, I would agree with you, because I think it does show... It's not, I don't want to say maturity, it is that the development of, you know, of that you just get when, as you write, and of course you've written so much, but it's wonderful to see that development. Now, of course, have you ever, in one case, I think you've gone back and rewritten a book.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
That's a good question. What happened was, I had started the book Ink Red Dead in the Kiki Lowenstein series as a short story, and it grew and grew and grew. And then later, I wanted something that I could give away to introduce people to the Kiki Lowenstein series. So I revisited everything I'd written, and I thought, you know, this short story is really novella length. And the timing of it chronologically is such that it's a good introduction to the series. So I went back and I rewrote it to turn it into more of a short book. And I also took into account some of the readers' comments, because this was a learning experience for me. I had so gotten into my research about animal hoarding that I'd gotten a little gross, I guess. And some of the early readers quickly said in the reviews, this book's just too gross. Well, when you hang around with mystery authors who talk about bumping people off and about bodies and maggots and blood spatter and things like that, gross is a relative term. But I thought, oh, you know, probably for someone who's been introduced to this series, it is a little too gross. So I not only rewrote it to lengthen it and to reposition it, but I also rewrote it and tone down some of the grossiosity.
Well, you know, that is something that writers have to take into consideration. They have to think about their readers, especially if you've developed a type of reader who expects the writing to be, well, let's say clean and no bad language or a certain type of writing. It really throws them off if you suddenly, you know, introduce either bad language, or as in the case of the readers who commented to you that it was gross. It really can upset readers. And I was asked recently to interview a writer, and I was going to interview her, and because her most recent book is very nice, it's a good book. She's a good writer. She has a journalistic background, so she's not just competent, but she's also very, very good. And I read the book, and then I went back and I was doing research on her. And of course, nowadays with the internet, you can't hide things that you've done. And her first book was so disgusting and so beyond gross. I mean, it was quite horrendous. And I was really actually shocked for a young girl to have, a young writer in her early 20s, to have written something so horrific. And as a matter of fact, she had to change her name. She changed her name because she didn't want that connection. But the connection's there. It's on the internet. And so I was thinking, do I want to encourage people to read this, the new book? And they might be inclined to go and look at the old book. And I thought, I really don't want, my listeners to become her readers. And so I'm not going to do the interview. And, people might find her. I'm sure they're going to find her in other ways. And I felt sort of bad. Should I do that? But what could I ask her about her previous writing? If, it just was too off-putting for me. So it is something that you have to think about when, writers have to think about.
Yes. Fortunately, I didn't do anything, I think, that would...
Yeah, no, I know your stuff was just
that.
Yeah, no, but nothing like that. But I'm just saying that
you're certainly right, though, that there. In fact, I was talking about this with a friend of mine who used to write for television. He wrote for a television series, and I forgot the name of the series he was saying to me that they actually altered some of their TV series episodes, the projection that they had, the trajectory, because of the way fans were reacting. And he and I had a really good talk about it, because as I'm working on book number 12 of the Kiki Lowenstein series, and Kiki's having her baby, the common thing to do in a cozy is to have somebody show up dead within the first three chapters. And my friend Brad Markowitz, who's an accomplished screenwriter and who wrote wrote for the Lost Girl series and directed a soap opera in Russia and things. And I said, Brad, but I think that's wrong for this, because I think that my readers really, really want to see the book open with Kiki having the darn baby. And if I don't give them that, they're not going to be satisfied. And he wrote for Facts of Life, that TV series.
Oh yeah.
And
he
said there were times when we had to alter what we were going to do in the series because we got feedback from fans. He said, Joanna, you have a fan base, and you owe it to those people to fulfill their expectations. If you don't, they're going to be really disappointed. So that's how it's going to open. There will be a hint that will lead to a crime and a murder later on in the book. But I think that I think as you go on, if you are fortunate enough to build a fan base, what you learn is your responsibility to these people. And I do have a responsibility to these people. They've been with me now for 15 years, and many of them have been through all sorts of ups and downs with me. So I owe it to them. And yes, one of the reasons that writers change their names and readers don't often realize this is because they may have written something that a set of readers would find objectionable. And therefore, they change their name so that they're not linked. I remember doing a signing once with a woman who wrote erotica, and she was actually a Sunday school teacher, too. And she wrote the erotica under an assumed name, but somehow somebody in the church community found out that she was writing erotica, and she opened the door one day to her minister and some of the church elders coming to talk to her.
Yeah.
This is a difficult world because you are putting yourself out there, and today people can find you.
Exactly. And as you said, if you develop this following, you have to respect what they want. I mean, as you said, they wanted Kiki to get married, and we will say she waited until like the last minute to do so.
Yes,
which was
she did,
which was
which was Kiki.
That's right. That was Kiki. So everybody can accept that. And they want this baby. And they, you better give them the nice baby first and have some.
Yep.
Have some of those delightful baby moments. So yeah, absolutely. There's so much to talk to you about. I didn't get to talk to you about yet about the death of a dowager, and this is your whole historical romance side,
right,
which is a whole another side of you, and this is it's fascinating. I have to take another quick little break. And when I come back, I specifically want, we'll mention about your historical thing, books, but I also want you to offer your advice to writers, because I'm sure they'd love to know how you do it and also ideas on how you get all the publicity you do. So
okay,
we'll be right back.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property. From trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements, the attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys. Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida with 30,000 square feet. And over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. And they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with the Z, and I'm back with Joanna Campbell-Slan, a best-selling author, and we're going to talk for a minute or two about her other series, and this is your historical series. Hi, Joanna.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, well, I'm enjoying this interview because, you know, you are prolific. You've developed such wonderful series, and I know that my listeners, particularly all the writers out there will want to hear, you know, some advice from you. So, but let's talk first about how you got involved in this historical series, the Jane Eyre Chronicles. How did you pick up where Charlotte Bronte left off?
I was on a panel and somebody asked us what individually what our favorite mysteries were, and I said that Jane Eyre was one of my favorite mysteries. And one of the panelists turned to me and said, but it's not a mystery. And I looked at her and I said,
yeah.
Okay, you've got somebody bumping around in the night who's setting fires, this guy who seems to be, you know, rich and have everything in the world to live for who's miserable, a little girl who says her mother disappeared, but then you're told that, no, she didn't disappear, a young girl who came from a wealthy family but who's sent into a foster home. It sounds like a mystery to me. And I realized after I walked away from the panel, well, yeah, you know, and why not? And so I wasn't sure I could do it, Patsy. I really wasn't, because a lot of people who write historical mysteries have a higher degree in history, and my degree is in journalism. But I thought, well, by golly, I'll give it a shot. So I wrote the Jane Eyre Chronicles, and there are three books in that series, and I hope that we'll be able to revisit it and pick it up and start it again.
Well, it's fascinating. I love the way that you've you know, turned Jane Eyre into a detective.
It makes sense, and she's a great character to be a detective, because she is able to move among high society, and she's been a servant, and she's curious, and she believes in doing what's right, and she just has all the qualities of a detective. So I think that she I think she's perfectly situated. So we shall see. We shall see what happens with that series.
Well, I think it's great. And you really got into, I know you're not a historian, but you captured, again, you have this wonderful ability, descriptive ability. And in this book, in all of the three, I see that you are really capturing the time, too, the period.
Well, let me tell you, as an author, one of the keys I've found to capturing and to getting people into your scenes, and that is to remember the five senses, but particularly the sense of smell, because research has shown that a smell will take us back to a memory faster than any other of the senses. So I was actually talking about this with Anne Perry, and she does a what you would call a smell pass through her books. When she finishes writing and she's going through and doing an editing, what we call an editing pass, which means that you're going through the book simply for the purpose of editing it, not to rewrite it or anything else, she goes through and she does a smell pass, and she looks at each scene and she says, what would be a smell that people would smell in this scene? And I found that really useful, because I think that when you evoke the sense of smell, you're making it much richer for your reader.
Oh, that's great advice. I think that's something that all writers should think about. It's fantastic.
Well, it's certainly something that I do. I mean, I often just kind of create an exercise for myself, or what I think is okay, I'll look at something and I'll say, how could I describe this, or what is this like? And frequently, if you just let yourself kind of go and you kind of brainstorm that, you'll come up with interesting analogies. And I also think it's really important that what we do is make the analogy match the parameters of the situation. For example, I was just looking at a book, and the beginning of it, she was talking about somebody, a dead body, and it hit the ground, and she said it broke open like a plate breaks open when it hits a tile floor. Now, that, to me, is a really bad analogy.
It's terrible.
Because people hitting a floor, they don't hit with a sharp sound. They don't crack in a delineated way the way a plate does. You know, a watermelon, yes. It might be like a water balloon hitting a floor. It might like be like a soggy, a soggy cupcake would hit the floor or something like that. But to say that that's the wrong analogy. So sometimes when I do my editing passes, and I look at my analogies, I say, okay, but is this really the right evocative word? Is this really going to evoke what I want it to evoke? And I think that that's a really important thing to do for authors, because otherwise, I mean, I looked at the book and I looked at it twice and I thought,
whoa.
Wait a minute.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you so much, Jenna, for joining me today. And I just, it's been wonderful. I think that your books are fantastic. And I hope that everyone will go out and start one of the series. And I know once they do one of the series, they'll go to the other ones. So thank you again, Jenna, for being on today. And your website is?
www.joannaslan.com. And people can find the first one, or at least one book in my series, on my Amazon author page. They're free. The books are free. People can get a taste and see if they like it.
Oh, I'm sure they will. So I want to thank you again so much. It's been fun. And when the new book comes out, I hope you'll come back on and we'll talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me, Patsy. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thank you, Joanna. Great talking to you.
Bye.
Bye now. Okay, so I suggest you go to her website or to Barnes & Noble. They have all of her books, and you will enjoy it. So that's Joanna Slan, Joanna Campbell Slan. Meanwhile, I just want to tell everyone that I call him my legal eagle, Bill Larson will be here on Thursday, and he'll answer questions. So if you have a question, a legal question, send it to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will ask Bill, and he will answer your questions, and he's going to talk about some other legal aspects. There are so many things that you have to know as a writer, Bill is always available to help. So thank you for joining me today, and I want you to remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. If you haven't started writing, then start writing now. Write a memoir, write a romance, write a cookbook. But whatever you write, just write and so you have something to share out of your life with those people that you love. And meanwhile, just remember to live life with love and to treasure each day and find your joy and share it. Bye for now.